The Six Pointer Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Six Pointer Podcast, the 23-24 end of season review. We are in the GPO, the post office, or the old post office in Alpington. We've got 3 pints of Guinness in front of us. Myself, Matthew, Luke is here, and a special guest. He's back. Who is it?
It's me, Mr. Smith, and can I just confirm that it's 1 pint of Guinness each, not 3 pints of Guinness each, in case any of our listeners are worried that this is going to go pear-shaped before it's even started.
Well, we just got here, Kev, so give it some time, mate. Give it some time.
To be fair, Kev, you did very kindly buy us a pint, and then Luke and I decided to do the Guinness challenge, and the look on your face when you saw us necking the Guinness, I thought we were going to do it in one, was probably we should have got that as the pod cover, really. But yeah, Kev's back to join us. Kev, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate, Matt. Thank you. Really nice to see you boys. Good to be up in Alpington. The old GPO, this is what we used to call the post office in the old days, but when you were youngsters. So really, really good. So looking forward to tonight. Looking forward to some laughs, some chat, and see where we go from there.
Very good. Well, it's great to have you back on the pod. Luke, how are you doing? Have you recovered from your winnings on the weekend?
I had
a bit of a course, you know.
I had a bit of a touch on Sunday, didn't I, mate? It was... reasons to celebrate more than just Crystal Palace's result and fantastic end of the season, which we'll get into today. But no, look, mate, it was a good day on Sunday. Feel good vibe around Selhurst Park, something which we all enjoy very much. So, yeah, looking forward to getting into that and talking about the rest of the season as well, because it was a bit of a roller coaster, wasn't it, Ralph?
Yeah, so I think we'll have to manage recency bias a bit on this pod, because I think otherwise we might be very, very positive throughout. And I think we need to sort of, you know, that wasn't the flavour of the whole season, but obviously the end was fantastic. Before we get into the pod itself, just a couple of shouts. Thank you to our sponsors, Graphic Vision DK. Don't forget the discount code 6pointer. 90% off. That's what you said, wasn't it? 90% off.
I don't know about that, bro, but for all your media needs in the larger Zealand area, please go to Graphic Vision DK.
I'm sure I saw you actually mention the pod. I'm sure he will. Not 90%. 19, maybe?
9?
TBC.
A TBC on that one. Big shout out to Anders and all the crew over there. And also a big shout out to the listeners who've stuck with us throughout this season. The ups and downs, the ebbs and the flows. The lack of podcasts at times. But yeah, thank you for sticking with us. And we've got some questions for tonight as well. So thank you to those who tuned in on Sunday and submitted their questions for today. So we're going to cover the year as a whole. We'll talk about the season and our personal reflections on it. I think we've got a few votes to make as well. So we're going to have a vote for player of the season, goal of the season, of which there are many to choose from, performance of the season. And then it obviously wouldn't be an end of season review with what's gone on without touching on the managerial position. So we'll talk about Sir Roy Hodgson, and who is very much becoming Sir Mr. Glasner, Oliver Glasner. So yeah, lots to cover. Excuse this one probably being quite a long pod, lengthy one, but hopefully you'll enjoy it, and a few Guinnesses, and we might be in the curry house later on, you never know as well, right, to continue things on.
Fingers crossed.
So Kev, I'll ask you first. A roller coaster of a season. How are you feeling after seeing what you've seen over the, what is it, 8-9 months of the year?
Yeah. Well, as you say, you've quite rightly said, Matt, let's be honest, if we take the last 7 games in isolation, it's been incredible. 21 goals scored, no losses. You know, so if you're averaging 3 goals a game, and you said that we were going to beat Liverpool, Man United, score 5 against West Ham, 5 against Aston Villa, I would have thought after what I'd seen earlier in the season you were delusional or had had too many Guinnesses already. But I think as you said, back end of the season, it does sort of paint a really polished different view of it. But I think, you know, we always know that Palace tend to come better towards the back end of the season, so I was quietly confident that Sir Roy would have still sorted it, but you can't help but be impressed by the buzz and excitement which is there at the moment. I was trying to think about it as I was coming up, because I obviously weren't there Sunday, but I got to see the highlights today despite trying to record it three times and thinking I hadn't recorded it at home, and my mum checked and said you must have recorded it, you must have, and then I found it three different times on my Sky thing that I had recorded it. So I got to watch the highlights and it just felt a real buzz, and for me it just took me back to nearly over 30 years ago before the Premier League, when Wrighty got his hat-trick on the last game of the season at Plough Lane against Wimbledon, and it had that real massive buzz about expectation for what Palace can do next season. So I just hope we don't get to a stage where there's so much excitement about what the future holds and then it becomes a bit of a dance squib over the summer.
Kev, you've mentioned so many important points there, the main one of which is big up Kev's mum. Hello to Kev's mum.
Hello to Kev's mum. Hope you're doing well.
I had that to cover in my introductory notes and I failed to cover that. Sorry to Kev's mum. But yeah, I think, and by the way, was that Ian Wright hat-trick in the red Fly Virgin?
It was, mate.
Yeah, was there an outside of the box volley?
Yes, where he brought it down over his shoulder from a long goal kick. And he put it in, and yeah, one of the last games at Plough Lane back in the day.
Was that the last season?
I think it was the 91 season. It's the season where we finished third, which is incredible, right? It was just one of those days, and that's frightening to think that is 33 years ago.
Scary.
But it was a good team.
Yeah, forgive me for reminiscing there, but you mentioned that, and I remember the goal. Yeah, I mean, you touched on a few things there that I think are important to remember, that it wasn't always like the last seven games. It was very up and down, it was a real roller coaster. And I think as a Palace fan, there's been a need for resilience this season, because we started off with high hopes. It was obviously, you know, Parrish kind of jinxed things slightly by talking about the aim for a 10th place finish this season, but the windows that we had, well, certainly the summer window anyway, didn't fulfil on setting Roy up and the team for that. Luke, we went to some real bumpy games this year. As Kev said, you have to take the last seven in context. What are your overall thoughts on the season?
I think it feels surreal, Rob, thinking back to, was it Sheffield United away, wasn't it, the opening game? Was that? Watching Eddie score and Roy have that little tussle on the sideline. And feels like an age ago now, doesn't it? So much has happened since then. I think you're right. Look, obviously, Jefferson Lerma came in and I've been very impressed with him. He was one of my shouts for player of the season, actually. I think one thing I didn't appreciate from watching him, I already knew he had a decent long-range shot on him, which we've seen, obviously, in the goal against Chelsea. He scored a cracker against us, didn't he, playing for Bournemouth in the last game of the season when we beat him 5-3. But he was so dominant in the air, like physically in the air, he's fantastic. And I thought he was a good signing in the summer. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I think we failed to furnish the squad with enough quality in depth, unfortunately. And we were, you know, after the opening win of the season, we found ourselves in a familiar position that, you know, Palace couldn't really score goals. And then I think we got into a strange time, didn't we, where a Roy Hodgson team that was so well known for being so resilient and well organised was conceding goals in, you know, last minutes of the game. And I think we were conceding like a ridiculous amount of goals in the 90th minute plus, or whatever it was, wasn't it, and just losing so many games and or snatching draws from the jaws of victory really at times as well. And there were the odd sort of flash of Palace resilience in the, I think back to the Man City away game, obviously coming back to that. That's a fantastic second half performance.
Brighton at home 1-1. That was a pretty good performance.
Brighton at home. Yeah. To be honest with you, it feels a bit like a blur, if I'm honest, a lot of the season, because it's been so weird. It's just been a strange season, and then obviously the massive turnaround, like Kev said earlier, has just been very strange. And I think it's appeased a lot of people from going from a time in October to December where there was calls from certain sections of the fan group of there being no future plan and no structure plan, no vision, Parrish out, all this sort of stuff, to, you know, I think he's gone a long way to showing that he has got a structure plan and a vision, and you know, from the January appointments, including the manager as well.
You touched on like some real turning points there in the season. So if you think about the way it started, didn't actually start unexpectedly. So, you know, obviously we got the win away at Sheffield, you'd expect that. We lost against Arsenal, you'd expect that. We drew with Brentford, okay, fair abouts. JP scored his hat trick in the cup away at Plymouth. Yeah, and that was when he was like murmured to be sold, wasn't it? Yeah, it was like, you know, is he going to go? Is he not going to go? And then we had a few sort of, you know, there was the Wolves win, the Villa defeat away, and then the Man United away victory, wasn't there, as well, in the league. Obviously, we lost them in the cup. But and so you kind of, August, September sort of time, it wasn't too bad. It started to go wrong sort of October with the Forest stalemate at home, the walloping away at St James's Park. And that's, I think, when it started to turn. And then if you think about when it started to get cold, and I think I say that in a serious note, because I think some of that had something to do with the turn of injuries we started to get. So Decore was at Luton, wasn't he? Yeah. Mm. Obviously there was the Lise goal at Luton, but things started to go south very much in sort of November, December time. And like you said, then January was grim, right? You know, the Arsenal battering away, the banners started coming out, and it really did turn. And I think then, obviously, we'll cover in a minute, I'm going to cover the whole season, but you know, with ending things did turn, didn't they, as it got a bit warmer and as we had the new manager come in. But it was pretty bad at points in the depths of winter. Yeah. Difficult to be a Palace fan at some times, really, right?
Yeah, I think you're right, Matt. It was a hard watch. I mean, the Arsenal, let's be honest, 5-0 away, we were 3-0 down with about a minute to go, I think. I think they got too late on. Yeah. Now, I don't know whether that flattered us on the day, but the reality of it is, you know, as you say, that in those quite rough performances, there had been some good performances. I mean, you've already mentioned one, the Man City, to come back and get a point at Man City. I mean, how many teams have scored 4 goals against Man City this season? You know, that was the last game we lost this season, as I understand it. I think we lost 4-2, and I think we took the lead, didn't we, at home at Man City. I think we took the lead, didn't we, in the first or second minute against Man City at home. So the reality of it is, you know, you're right, there has been some tough stuff. I think we also had the terrible scenario where Roy was taken very ill, wasn't he, at the time when it was rumoured that the changes were happening. And I agree, I think the feeling, as a lifelong Palace fan, I was very sad to see some of the banners come out and what was going on, because A, Roy didn't deserve that. Personally, I didn't think Parrish deserved it. I don't understand all the background of the politics of what may or may not have gone on, but I thought it was very, very sad, and I was convinced, and you've only got to talk to my wife and my children, and guaranteed Palace are going down this year, because I couldn't see us changing that. So for Glasner to come in and for it to be the way it has, and let's be honest, it wasn't great those first few games. He got the first win, but he put that down to, I think, the Roy and Paddy McCarthy and the management team beforehand. Those first two or three games, it didn't quite click, but you know, from then onwards, the high press, the way they've been, I think they've been incredible.
Those banners, Kev, I can remember, like you, watching that on TV and just feeling a real moment of sadness that this wasn't my club that I remember. This was what's happening in Sunderland and Newcastle, and you know, like sort of just fans just turning on their own club. It was a horrible moment. I remember just being really just down about
away, wasn't it? When it really,
well, Brighton away as well, obviously, when we went down at half time 3-0, where it was, wasn't it? And the banners came out then again. There was just a real period of discontent among the fans. It was just a nasty feeling at times, a bit toxic, really.
I think the low moment, sorry, just Brighton away, wasn't it, was Roy brought Elise on, I think, to try and change it, didn't he? And then it backfired, didn't it? His hamstring went again, didn't he? And I think that was it. That was the challenge, wasn't it? That, you know, they were dropping like flies, and these were players we couldn't afford to have dropping like flies.
Some of the stuff around that time as well, though, from, like I say, the toxicity of the fan base, you know, there was sort of Roy should be sacked for that alone sort of thing. And I struggle with some of that sort of stuff, if I'm honest. I mean, because it's bad luck, isn't it? The bloke comes on and the medical team tell you he's fit enough to play whatever, a half or whatever it is. He comes on, right? What if he doesn't put his hamstring? What if he, you know, plays 45 minutes and maybe gets an assist for JP or whatever it is, or JP got a goal in the end, obviously. But you know what I mean? Like, and all of a sudden, you know, Roy shouldn't get sacked for bringing him on. There was a lot of sensationalism around that sort of time as well. A lot of hyperbole and just sort of a lot of nonsense, which made it a difficult
time. Hyperbole would make its way onto a Palace pod, but there you go.
Look at that. And hyperbole. Out of my brother's mouth as well. I think lots of people got caught up on that negativity bandwagon, didn't they? And I think it started quite small and quite contained. And I think what happened was the toxicity, yeah. if I could say
it's
the word,
say
it is. It spread, yeah. And I think the media picked up on it, yeah. And unfortunately, a narrative was created, and it just was a domino effect. And I think, I'm not going to lie, right, my mental health was affected by that period of time. Yeah. I found it very difficult going to Palace games, like you said, watching it on telly, reading the stuff and seeing the stuff in the media. And for me, it was against people, well, a football club that I love, and also people that I respect for. So I've got a lot of respect for Parrish, and Hodgson obviously goes without saying. And I think me at the time, it came by personal, you know, and I was quite upset by it. And I think I was comforted by the way it was resolved, because obviously, you know, I'm really pleased that Roy is okay, but in some ways it gave Palace a out from the situation, because something needed to change. And me and you were talking, we were like, this has got to change, this is going to change at some point, we can't see it continuing. But it did continue for some time, and the banners came out for a number of different games, and it was very difficult to see and consume. And like you said, Kev, what then happened was the change that wasn't immediate, but people got behind the change, and I think that's what we needed at that point in time as a fan base.
You're right. Everton away was the other game where the flags come out, wasn't it? And that was like three games, away games, and away when it happened. It didn't happen at home games, from what I can remember. It happened away games. But I think
it did. One home game, yeah, one home game.
But you're right in the sense that I think the Arsenal moment was a turning point, because Don Fifield, I think, said this on an Athletic podcast, that up until that point, you know, where Sky was there and the cameras picked it up, nobody in the media actually cared about Palace having this rough run, and all of a sudden the focus was on it, and that sort of built the pressure even more so, and perhaps probably forced Steve Parrish and the owners to make it or go down the road and make a decision quicker than perhaps they would have done otherwise. If the cameras hadn't picked those, you know, it would have been what the South London Press and well, Sky Sports might have said something like that, but it wouldn't have been as big as it was, and that was a real turning point.
I think the one thing I would add from that as well, and again, we don't want to focus too much on it, and I wouldn't mind coming on in a moment to something I saw in the week which really encouraged me. But what I really want to just call out at that point as well was the absolute professionalism and integrity of Roy, and the way he was, whether he was on the media, whether he was being interviewed by Sky, whatever he was being involved in, he was the absolute consummate professional, the gentleman that he is, and that came through, and that's why I think, mostly like you said, Matt, with your mental health, that's why I think it affected so many of good people, because we've all been at Selhurst when the banter can get quite nasty. We know that, but sometimes that's throwaway, and we laugh it off. But I can imagine it would have got very toxic, particularly where you boys sit sometimes. I can imagine that could have got really quite nasty, and that's not good for anyone.
But it's not Crystal Palace either. That was the biggest thing that hurt me, that it wasn't the way that Crystal Palace support their football club.
No, yeah.
You know, Crystal Palace get behind the team no matter what.
That's what I said about their fans.
And then there was incidents as well, like the Brighton away, with at the end the players went over and people were like confronting them and stuff. And some of that, I understand, was good-natured and there was conversations, but others was, well, portrayed, you know, I wasn't there, but portrayed to be a certain one. I think that's when Palace became negative in the press.
Absolutely.
And that's, I think, when the, to use the term again, the domino effect very much escalated. And yeah, it was difficult to take.
I think we should move on from the negativity in a minute, because I don't want to be too much on that, but it has to be a balance, I appreciate. But I think, bruv, I just think where we were sitting as well, we saw instances of people fighting among fans, among themselves around that time, and people just, yeah, they just turned inwards on themselves. You know, there was the div who walked up the stairs and absolutely booted that seat at the end of our road, smashed it into pieces at the end of one of the game that I think we drew, where maybe was it Brentford we threw it away in the last minute or something like that. And you did see those moments among us. It wasn't nice, and thank God we're in a very good, different place now.
Yeah, can I just, because it's mostly a nice way to finish it, if I may. So obviously Roy got an award this week at the I think it was the League Managers, and I saw him talking a little bit about the story, and he was being interviewed by the lady from Sky, one of the Sky lady presenters, who he was talking about his time in football. And he talked about one of his proudest moments was winning his first title in 1976, and he said there was only one Swedish TV station, and they had to stop. They stopped at our house just before it was the same newsreel every night at the same time. And apparently his other member of staff, 15 players and about five or six drunk editors, or sorry, not editors, press people who had been with them went in and they watched it, and they said that was the only way they could see that they'd actually won the league or something, and that sums it all up. That for me, Roy, no matter what he's done, all these things, he never forgets what I would call the basics and where he comes from. And that's why he's, you know, there should one day, I don't care what anyone says, there should be a statue of Roy at Sellers Park for what he's done. Put it next to the one next to Sir Steve, and we'll do the same. Sir Steve and Sir Roy.
And Julian Sperani.
And Julian Sperani, yeah.
I wonder if that will be part of the new ground, a statue, you know, not the new ground, sorry, the new stand, you know, might do something sort of statue.
Right.
If it happens. just to finish off like this conversation, maybe we'll pause for end of part one at this point. I think that period was difficult. There were some good moments in it, though, right? I mean, that Luton away game, yes, Decore got injured, yes, it was grim, we lost, and, you know, we kind of got sucked into the Kenilworth Road atmosphere, I think, in some ways. But that Elise goal, you know, you'll never,
don't
ever...
Don't take that. Isn't that part of our discussion?
Well, later.
You can vote later, Ken. You can vote later. I'm going to mention...
Don't take it away!
I'm going to mention goals along the way. There was the Elise goal, right? There was that. There was also the away victory against Burnley. That you know, we scrapped for that one as well. Schlappi at the back post, you know, the knock in there. I mean, Tyreek Mitchell scored, for good sakes, in that game. You know, there were positive moments in it. There were times we ground out results. I mentioned the Brighton draw at home. You guys mentioned the Man City away. So there were positive moments in it. Just to finish up this, because I want to turn to the positive element in part two. Roy, so the way it ended was not what we wanted it to be. However, like I said just a minute ago, I think it ended in the most nicest way it could have done, in a sense, in the way he exited the club. Kev, can I just ask you for maybe a statement or two about Roy's impact on Crystal Palace Football Club in his 10 years as a whole?
Absolutely. Complete gentleman, complete professional, and a Croydon boy through and through. And just the... I think a lot of people liked Crystal Palace because of Roy, and with the greatest respect, after his England, what happened at the end of England, let's be honest, we hadn't lost against Finland or whoever, Iceland, Finland. I'd gone to the wrong superstore, you know, I'd gone to Finland instead of Iceland.
That's where Finn's from.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. You know, if that had ended as badly as it had, you know, but he came in. Let's be honest, he took us over when, you know, we were in a tough place. We had no points for 7 games, and I know he oversaw a few of those, but we can never lose sight of, you know, we are in the Premier League for what will now be our 11th or 12th season, and we laud Sir Steve Coppell, who kept us there for 5 seasons. It's just what he means to the club and what he should mean to proper football supporters is everything.
Yeah, a man of undeniable pedigree, you know, having managed, you know, in a number of different countries, you know, taking people like Malmo to Europe, so much so he's so highly regarded there that, you know, Roy's corner is in the corner of their stadium, and well, hopefully one day we'll have that at Selhurst, you never know. But yeah, for me, undeniably Palace's greatest ever manager. You know, nobody is foreseen such a, I've got, you know, taken the club through a period of such consistent success in finishing, you know, comfortably in the Premier League. You know, I think, was it when he took over, we were in the bottom three, and I don't think
we didn't have a point.
That was it, wasn't it? But then I think the Watford game that season took us out of that and that bottom three, and since then we hadn't been. Until his end of his tenure, we hadn't been in the bottom three again, and that's incredible. You consider, you know, the perceived lack of investment in the squad, that, you know, the fact that he is a victim of his own success. We've talked about it many times that he's shown that he can do things on a shoestring. So he was given that hand, and to see Palace comfortably in the Premier League.
Is this a few statements?
For that period of time, yeah, I'm a huge fan, and hopefully I'll you know, he'll get his parade on the pitch at some point.
Matt?
I always think of when Roy walked out at Selhurst at the start of a game and he looked back over his shoulder to the Holmesdale, and I like to think that was him thinking about standing there with his dad on the terraces.
Yeah.
And that to me always used to sort of pull a bit of a heartstring, because if you think about your own journey to Crystal Palace and becoming a fan as a child, that's what you think back to. And I think that always stayed with me, and every game he would do it, every single game, and that meant a lot to me. And I think that I think back to the good times with the banner that was put up, like the Tifo, is it Tifo or Tifo, I never know how to pronounce it, the Tifo, with one Roy Hodgson, one of our own, on it, and some of the stuff the Palace media team did around him, and sort of, you know, the prominence and the impact he made at Crystal Palace. Massive for me, and like you said, a gentleman. I hope to meet him one day to say thank you, because I think for me,
well,
we
should send him this pod.
We should do.
We should.
Do you know what I want to do? Is give a shout out, because if anyone has not listened to the 5-year plan podcast with Roy Hodgson, it is the best podcast I've ever listened to. He talks for about an hour, maybe a bit more, about his journey through football. He tells stories about, you know, turning points in his career. Talks about the real stuff that you mentioned, Kev, about, you know, building a career abroad and being the first to try this and that. And you realise how revolutionary he was in what he did. And they talk about, like, you know, how much football changed in the future. He's got views on it. And like, how can you not respect the views he has? What a man. So,
and I think the thing is, mate, sorry, just to say that, it's how well regarded he is by people in football who have worked with him, or have coached, like Gary Neville, people, anyone around him. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut across.
No, well, you're right, because there's a statement, isn't there? Wasn't it Mourinho who said, Mr. Was it?
He's
the boss. He is. And people think that of him as a football man. So, like, yeah. It didn't end the way I wanted it to. I wanted it to end the end of the season, Palace safe, and him get the send off that I think he deserved. But it didn't happen. It happened a different way. And I hope he knows that, to fans like us, what he means to Crystal Palace Football Club.
Okay. Can I just finish that off, though? So, this week, England have announced their preliminary squad, right? 4 Crystal Palace players in there, which I think is the joint top.
Yeah.
In the Premier League. Just park
it there, Kev.
Yeah, I know. Just park it for the moment. All 4 of those players were brought in by Roy Hodgson, unless I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong.
I think maybe Dougie Freeman.
All right, but they're under Roy's tenure.
Was Wharton
there? Elise?
He was signed.
Of course he would have been, wouldn't he? He would have been.
Elise, Eze, Henderson.
Wharton.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, sorry, Wharton. Apologies. Scrap that. All right, but 3 or 4, I'll take.
No,
right.
Wharton, Eze, Gaye, Elise. Not Elise.
Henderson.
Sorry. Yeah. What are you saying, Elise?
Why
did I say Elise? I don't know.
Because I'm still open. He's going to come and play for us.
He's not, mate. He's not.
I know.
But no.
So stay with us for part 2. Don't forget, at 6-Pointer Podcast on Instagram and Twitter for all your 6-Pointer Podcast needs. See you in part 2. Hello and welcome back to the 6-Pointer Podcast, part 2 of the 6-Pointer Podcast. Okay, we've got to say part 2.
Part 2!
Yes, we've had a couple more Guinnesses in us, so it's probably more like to be a livelier half, but also it's going to be a more positive part.
This is going to be 3.
Oh, you've had 3 points. Sorry, he's had 3 points, we've had 2 points.
This is going to be like Pizza Express at Wembley last year or 2 years ago.
We didn't do a podcast, did we?
Yeah, we did. We did the Pizza Express one, didn't we?
No, we didn't do a Pizza Express.
No, we didn't do it at Pizza Express, but we were starting to get pretty tanked up before.
I got the app out.
You got the app out, and then started swearing as you ran down Wembley Way.
Got some free dough balls and some massive bronies. That's the only reason we couldn't find anywhere else to have a beer, could we? So we got to get some bronies. Good times. Anyway,
you've completely thrown me off.
Part 2.
This is part 2, the positive part. So we're going to talk about onwards and upwards. What's this, February, March time? So, look, Oliver Glasner came in, like we've touched upon, had a really good first game. We expected to win against Burnley. It was a 3-0. And the kind of feel-good factor came in at Palace. Kev, when he came in, how confident were you that things would be turned around?
Well, I think he was in the stands at Everton, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Which was a good point, let's be honest. An away point at Everton, not to lose there, was really important. I think what I quite liked when he did one of his first interviews, I think it was the Burnley game. Yes, he gave credit to Paddy McCarthy and the team who had done what they'd done. But what I really liked was, he struggled to understand the concept of being happy with a draw, which almost put us, talked about almost like front foot football. And I quite liked that and was reasonably confident that we would see a change in the way we played. I couldn't have ever envisaged it would be as front foot as it is and pressing as it is. But yeah, I was quietly confident he would get it right. I must admit, I think, as I'd said previously, I still think Roy would have kept us up, but I don't think we would be as excited about what the future holds if we were still under Roy. Whereas this guy, you know, being a serial winner with Eintracht Frankfurt as well, I'm really, really excited by what he can bring to us. And what I like more than anything, Matt, and I obviously see a lot of you guys are there week in, week out. I see a lot of it through what's on the telly and that. I love the fact that when players score, they're celebrating. They're celebrating as a team. But I love it when they go to him. I think there was one where Elise went and cuddled him. And that says a lot to me. And my big hope, not that I'm Father Christmas, but if I could put anything on my wish list, is to all our superstars, give me one more year. Because I think a proper pre-season under Glasner, you know, who knows, could we make the top six?
You say you're not a Father Christmas, Kev, but with that grey beard, I think you might be getting there, mate. But
that is hard. I think I look quite sharp tonight.
I think he's run out of Just For Men, but don't really need to worry about that, mate.
that is really harsh.
That is very harsh. Don't worry, you're not going to get any part-time work as Father Christmas, Kev, not just yet, anyway. The thing for me was the building blocks had been laid in the January transfer window, so we cannot forget the two signings that were made, right? Is it Nunes?
Nunes.
I only know pronounce the agent correctly because I spoke to a bloke who started in a Frankfurt office today at work, who's a Colombian bloke, and he told me it's Nunes.
So Nunes. And the less difficult to pronounce, Adam Walton. And I think they'd had a couple of games by that point, right? By the time he joined, obviously Walton had a very difficult debut. Moon has had a difficult debut.
Skinned a couple of times, didn't he, against Brighton? Yeah.
But to be fair, they kind of had a couple of games to not acclimatise, but you know, start to play some football. And I think for me, what we saw quite quickly and what's been evident in the recent games is the fitness levels. So Palace struggled to hang on to games, which was untypical of a Roy Hodgson team towards the end, and part of it I think was the fitness levels for whatever reason, and hence a number of injuries. And I think you started to see more and more the fact that our players do look fitter, our star players have come back in, and very much we've been helped by that, haven't we, Luke, in the last run of games to have basically the first 11.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been very impressed with the style of football, which is certainly more front foot and attacking, and a huge credit has to go to Oliver Glasner and his coaching team that he's brought in, as well as obviously Paddy McCarthy and those that have stuck around as well. But no two ways about it, bruv, it has also coincided with Eze and Elise coming back into the team and playing together for longer periods of time, and he's massively helped by that. But that's not to take away from the different style of play that we're playing, the fact that even without Mark Gay we've looked more defensively resolute.
Well, how much better has Anderson looked? He was like a new player. Like before the change in formation, he was like shot as a player, basically, excuse me for the term, but he was 30% of what we've been used to seeing, right? He looks a world beater now.
I agree.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think even the likes of Nathaniel Clyne, Tyrick Mitchell, you know, everyone's up their game significantly. And I think the thing is, I mean, we'll come on to it, I'm sure, at some point later on, but the Adam Walton signing, you know, it's easy to talk about how good it is, and I think from what you sent out earlier today to us boys, I think there's talk that Doogie's going to stay, isn't there? Now he's not going to wherever he was going, Newcastle, wherever he was tempted to go. But I think the Adam Walton signing, when I look at that young man, and yes, he's got into the England scenario this week, he will blow them away. Because, and I saw Paul Merson on Sky Sports this week, and he was really waxing lyrical about how good he was. But what he loved about him, which I couldn't have put any better myself, was he gets the ball and he releases it quickly. So he gets it to Elise, he gets it to Eze before they're picked up. And if they've got that extra second to get away from their markers or whatever, and they have just gone to the next level. So he sees that pass quickly, he deals with it. And then when you've got the running of Munoz or whatever, it's just a pleasure to watch. It's a real exciting team to watch at the moment.
Well, we're going to talk about player of the season in part three, but you know, player of the half season, you know, Adam Wharton and Daniel Munoz are certainly in there for a shout, aren't they, as well as sort of Nathaniel Klein. And well, we'll get on to JP in a bit, but
his twin brother, you mean?
Sorry,
his twin brother. They swapped out the old JP Mateta and replaced him with his twin brother.
must be that, mate.
What's with that different celebration as well against when he scored against Villa?
He didn't cut the corner flag, did he?
I didn't like that.
Why is the corner flag kick gone? What's happening?
I have to worry about that one.
Although maybe it's a thing he only does at away grounds now. Maybe that's the thing. You should only do that sort of to collect.
You don't want to break out flags, right?
Exactly, that's it.
Can I just say, on the Adam Wharton one, I think the other thing about watching him, I said it from day one to you, brother, when we watched him, is that the thing about him is, if you look at him, he's very, very slight. You wouldn't say he's stacked. You wouldn't say he's the size to be a Premier League central midfielder. But I think if you watch him, watch how quick he is in getting to the ball. He's there before someone else, because he's like two seconds ahead of everyone, steps. Yeah. It's mad how quickly he gets to the ball, and I think that's the thing. He reads the game so well, and it's scary that he's a kid.
So how have Man United missed that? I'd say Man United, because obviously he's a big club. He's from Blackburn. He's from that neck of the woods. How is their scouting network not found this kid?
I mean, it's a different level of risk, isn't it, I guess, Kev, isn't it? To go to Man United and,
The thing I think with him is that whoever took him on is a gamble. So he can do it in the Championship, right? And lots of people can do stuff in the Championship. The Premier League is a massive step up.
Well, I don't know that lots of people can do it in the Championship. Right? You're doing a bit of disservice to the Championship. It's a very good league with some quality players.
What I mean is that people can look a certain quality in the Championship, and you would say, "Oh, blah blah's good, blah blah's good." The number of those blah blahs who can make the step up to the next level is few and far between, right? But so I think the thing with him was, who would take a gamble on him? Who would actually say, "Let's invest £18 million," which is not a big amount of money in the scheme of things, but it's not a small amount.
It's a massive amount to Blackburn Rovers.
Well, with the whole FPP dynamic as well for clubs to manage. You know, there's a lot of clubs who are on the brink of potentially being in risk of it, right? And you're going to see the likes of the Chelseas and the Villas, no doubt, have to sell some people. I mean, Conor Gallagher, how Chelsea could ever consider selling Conor Gallagher? But apparently, he's up for sale this summer. But back to Wharton, I think just it's this the step up he made and the pace at which he made it shows that he's ready to be involved in that English setup. Has it probably come too soon? Maybe. So, you know, a year of playing the Premier League week in, week out and smashing it, if this was the Euros a year on, then probably be a starter, right? Be interesting to see who makes the squad, but I think what a nice problem for Palace to have people like him. And did you read a thing the other day about, was it Bayern Munich or someone who interested him? It's ridiculous. Palace have been playing for a few months and all of a sudden he's being talked about for a £50 million striker, signing for a European, top European club. Madness.
I think it was, you know, a moment of immense pride when there were four Palace players called up for England. And for Adam Wharton as well, and for Crystal Palace, it can only be a good thing. I mean, look, worst case scenario, he doesn't get picked. Goes down from the 33 to the 26 or whatever it is. And even though Southgate said he might even take 26, he said it's hard to manage 26. So let's see what happens there. But let's say he does go to the Euros, right? You know, he will benefit massively being in that training camp and getting that experience from those players. But look, let's say that Palace, England win against, who's the first game?
Slovenia.
That
is Serbia.
Beat Serbia, beat Denmark, and in the last game again, is it Slovenia in the last game?
Who are you supporting in the Denmark game? Is it yesterday?
England, obviously. No, England. I'm not a proud Englishman. What are you doing? Say England are sort of, you know, they've won those two games, maybe he might come on at half time, or might get half an hour. You imagine that in the last group game and there's nothing to play for. Like, that adds, I mean, a ridiculous amount of money to his price tag in terms of Palace are concerned, because let's face it, he will go on to bigger and better things than Crystal Palace. We can all see it now, even though he's only been there for a few months. He will be, you know, a bigger player, will play on the bigger stage, and the experience of Palace will benefit from that whilst he is there at the same time. So it's a fantastic situation for Palace to be in, and congratulations to Adam Wharton and his family for getting in the England squad.
Kev, do you enjoy watching a 5-3-1 combination?
I absolutely do, Matthew. No, I listen, I enjoy watching Palace full stop at the moment. It's an absolute pleasure to watch them at the moment. So I don't care what formation Glasner puts out there. What I love is the work rate of the players. I love the intensity. I look at the second goal against Newcastle. I've got some good friends who are Newcastle fans who went to the game and they said, we battered them because we pressed. And I think the second goal was a classic example where I think there was a fantastic 1-2 where JP scored. And that to me is the new Palace. It's really exciting. Really exciting.
Well, that, you talk about the Newcastle game. I wasn't there for that, unfortunately, because I was flying out across the North Sea. But I was there for the Man United game on the Monday night, that 4-0 demolition. And that was, I mean, maybe it's also part of the fact that, obviously, growing up watching 90s football and seeing Man United dominate everything, that's made me hate them so much. But seeing us absolutely dismantle Man United, a club of that stature, just we dominated that game. Like, Man United weren't even in the game. Palace were unplayable that night. 4-0 against Manchester United. It should and probably could have been more. And for me, that was a real high point this season. And obviously it continues
as
well.
He's moved on the high points already, man.
No, I was just... We were talking about the high points of the second half of the season, aren't we?
Yeah. But there's loads of them.
There are.
Four goals in the first 30 minutes against West Ham.
West Ham was a crazy game.
Will that be up there?
Probably.
This is the thing though about this second half of the season that we talked about. You know, Glasner came in, you know, things weren't great, the initial win, a few rocky results, you know, people were quite critical about the Forest result and so on and so forth, and then obviously it's picked up in the last, as you said a couple of times, last seven games. And I think what's been really nice is I've looked forward to going to Palace. I wasn't enjoying it at all, as I said to you, turn of the year, and it was affecting me. I enjoy going there. It's been really nice. It's been enjoyable in respect of the whole atmosphere, in respect of the whole feel of things. It was nice that, you know, the whole TIFO thing got sorted at the end of the season. And I don't know, it bodes well, doesn't it, for next season. Being Palace, we're always going to throw a roller coaster in there, right? Someone's going to get a cruise shot or something in the summer at the Euros, or we're going to sell three of the best players. I know, but it's what makes Palace fun, right?
I think, Rob, also, because we had that low period that we talked around Christmas, January, with the banners and the toxicity and things like that, I think we appreciated, it's probably the wrong word, but we appreciate the low lows, so now the high highs feel so much even more so.
Yeah,
and I think you've gotten that roller coaster so much so that it's just you've been in the low place, so you appreciate the high even more. And
I think there is something though in the turnaround that we've made, and it does show the foundations that are there. I think, however, it does also remind us that we haven't had that team available all season. Hence, then the thing I think about though is that Palace often turn up in the season. If you can think about last year, remember the Leeds away game, you know, you know. So we've had a few of these instances. I think now
Leicester before that as well. But yeah. There was a couple of games we were fantastic.
But the opportunity now, the thing for the Palace hierarchy to consider is where they want to go from here, right? And do we build? So I mean, I can see one of them going in the summer, right? It's likely that at least one of the four stars.
Do you honestly think one of them will go?
Yes, because I think to support the stand and to support the fact they need to bring in a lot more players who can compete for the first, who can compete for the first team, because bar that starting 11, we are pretty limited. And as showed earlier in the season, a few injuries means that, you know, we are in a bit of a bad place. So I think we need to fund, you know, there's rumours of another defender coming in, whether that's to replace someone going or it's just a supplement what they've already got. I think you need another one or two attacking players. So we're very reliant on Mateta being on form with me, aren't we?
Edouard. Also massively reliant on Lise being a wide man. So if he goes out, obviously you've got AU, but... And Schlupp can play as well, but Jesmyn Ratzacki probably needs his season in the Championship, doesn't he? And I think you need to invest in a wide player, Eden.
At least one, yeah. So there's competition for places back up. There's been also a squad to build there as well. And I think there's also something in them letting Tompkins and Reidewell go. So I'd expect another centre midfield to come in as well, regardless.
Yeah,
so I think it'll be, it's an important summer for Palace because it's really a turning point. And like I say, last year I felt it was a missed opportunity. What Parrish said about 10th place, you know, blah, 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 I think we should have backed it, you know, and I don't think we did. And I think now's the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I think Mark, the rumours are Mark Gay might go to Man United or leave the club. And look, he has not been available a lot of this sort of very good run that we've had. So that shows that Palace can sort of perform without him, despite him being of obvious quality and probably will go for upwards of sort of £60 million. And, you know, Chris Richards has stepped in there. He's been fantastic. Jefferson Lerma's done a job as well. Nathaniel Klein's been a revelation as well in that role, in that right centre-back role. And, you know, if you play three at the back, you've got to have those defensive options. And like you say, bruv, if you got rid of Tompkins, you need someone else to come in and fill that role. And if that Barcelona Betis kid is the one to do it, and they've had a touch as well, if they buy him for €3 million and sell him for 18, as it's rumoured, then that's fantastic. But also, how nice is it to see Palace doing their business early, Kev?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing, you're absolutely right around the defensive side, and we talked about it earlier on in the pod. You know, Anderson has looked like a different player under Glasner. You know, he looked as though he took, you know, I can remember when he came in looking incredible, and then he sort of, I feel as though he's drifted for a player of his calibre. You know, I'm assuming he's going to go to the Euros, is he, with Denmark?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, so he's going to be in the shop window as well, but he's been superb. So again, I do think we are relying on him playing well. So if Mark does go...
But that's the issue, Kim. We're reliant on a number of people, aren't we?
Yeah,
but I think what I would say is that Palace used to be reliant on Wilf and Wilf only. Now we're reliant on a lot more. So it's become more of a team.
Yeah.
And like we said in the first part, you know, Roy's been part of that journey, and I think Glaz has picked it up and he's recognised playing to their strengths, but also the fact that players have come on under him as well has been really impressive. So like I said, I think it's a turning point this summer. It's a good opportunity. Fingers crossed we get through the Euros unscathed in terms of our players there. Fingers crossed we keep hold of our star players, and fingers crossed we supplement them with some other stars to be, which is what Dougie's good at.
And
right,
and fingers crossed we get out of this pub and get to the Curry House before they shut.
This way is looking doubtful, isn't it? Right, look, at Six Pointer Podcast, Instagram and Twitter. We'll be back with you for part three from the Curry House. See you there. Hello, welcome back to part three of the Six Pointer Podcast, the end of season 23-24 review. We've had our Guinnesses, we've had our curry. I'm ready for part three, right, Kev? You up for it?
Absolutely ready, mate. Born ready. Born ready, son.
I'm still here.
He's still here.
Luke's had another Guinness. He's there.
Right, goal of the season. Kev?
Listen, you already alluded to it earlier for me, Matt, and that is actually the Elise goal, I think, really, at Luton away. I know we ended up losing the game, but for me, the way he drifted in, I think he was on the right-hand side, cut inside his player, did what he does. I think he dropped his shoulder and just put it in the far corner. And I think I'm not wrong. I don't think a match of the day, it was one of the six goals of the season. Don't know where it got in. I don't think it won it. But to me, I mean, and the other one I would say, that's my goal of the season, but also the strike of the season, just purely for the noise the stanchion made when it hit the back of it, has got to be Slupscott at Fulham as well.
Okay.
Well, look, it'd be remiss of me to mention goal of the season without mentioning how many absolute bangers we had this season. Let's be honest. Obviously, the Liverpool goal, away goal, weren't it? I think that's because it's the best team goal. There was obviously the Lerma goal against Chelsea that I really liked. Obviously, the Elise goal you mentioned, Kev. But for me, you alluded to there, Schlupp against Fulham. The fact that it hits the stanchion as well and on the underside of the bar where it was. And it was a stanchion, wasn't it? It hit the stanchion. Just the noise it made and the power behind it, and Eze's goal against Villa as well, that I caught just as I was coming back from having a wee, that last game of the season was fantastic. And for me, no, Schlupp against Fulham, for pure power, for pure the aesthetic beauty of the goal, has to be Schluppy for me.
Can I just add to that, the Schlupp goal, The best bit about Schlupp's goal is Walton's reaction when it goes in, where he puts his hands on the back of his head as if to say, has that really just happened? And that, to me, captures everything that's brilliant about football. That Walton played, I think Walton played the ball in, and he's just hit an absolute worldie. And Walton's reaction, that's almost like schoolboy stuff, isn't it? The way he reacted as if to say, oh my goodness, has that really just gone in? And that, I thought, was
we can't
nice.
See that, but for those listening to the podcast, it's Kev putting his hands on his head.
Yeah, apologies about that.
Matthew.
So I'm going to say my goal of the day, my favourite goal. So my favourite goal was one that we were at, Luke, which was Tottenham away, and it was Eze's free kick. And it was brilliant to be in the away end there and see it, and like the angle we had of it, and like the way he sort of curled the ball into the top of the net. So that's my favourite goal. I can't look past. Actually, one more shot. Actually, Anderson's goal, Man United away, the volley.
Great,
I like that one as well, because the way it came at him really quickly, adjusts his body and gets behind it without skying it. But yeah, I like the Schuppi goal. I do like the Schuppi goal. Like the fact that the ball into him was quite nice. It bounced just in front of him. He hadn't been on long as well, don't forget. So he's not exactly that warmed and greased up, right? So, yeah, that's probably my goal this season. Schlappi.
There we go. It's two votes for Schlappi, one vote for what was
yours, Kev? Elisa Luton away. Okay, so. What about performance of the season? That can be either team performance, as in against someone, or individual. Kev.
So I think for me, performance of the season is mostly the win away at Liverpool, because of the importance of it and the fact that Liverpool were part of a three-horse race at that point for the title. And I think, with the greatest respect, us winning that day killed them off. I mean, it was the same day that Arsenal then lost to Aston Villa. But I think for a Palace to go and put that performance in, as you've already alluded to, the team goal we scored was absolutely beautiful. Yes, we rode our luck a little bit up there, but I knew then, well, I felt then, that once we'd got that result in Liverpool, we were going to be safe. And obviously that almost was the catalyst for us to just go on this incredible run. So I think that was good. I think you can't also look past the fact that, yes, it was a poor Man United side, but we absolutely destroyed them at Selhurst Park. And four goals, no disrespect to United, I think they were unlucky, because I do thought the goal they scored could have stood, personally. But the reality of it was, we got four, and I thought, this is going to be a cricket score. And you never really think that against a Man United side, but I thought we were picking them off at will. So I think both those performances for me were outstanding, really.
In terms of team performance, I've got to be with there, Kev. That Man United performance, I mean, it's obviously very close to the Villa performance, but Villa, I guess, didn't really turn up. A bit like Man United, but we were fantastic in that. I think if I've got to pick individual player performances, obviously Jean-Philippe Mateta scoring a hat-trick against Aston Villa, you can't look far past that. But for me, I'm going to go with Dean Henderson away at Man City, simply for that in that second half he kept us in that game, made two fantastic, outstanding saves, really a reach far to his right in one of them, and then I think he made a block in another one. But two saves that were instrumental in Palace getting a draw in that game, that they gave us the foundation and the footing to come back and come back into that game. Dean Henderson against Man City for me. Gruff?
So I'm also going to go for the Man City, but more for the way we managed the game to be still in it, to be able to come back for 2-2. I think as a team performance it was pretty special, and it's one that people, you know, although Palace have had some good results against Man City away, people remember that one. You know, not many people did that to Man City, and the way we came back, so to still be tuning in with an hour gone, but also then to be able to come back with sort of 15 minutes to go, and at the death as well, to get the penalty the way we did and come back into it. I struggle to also, when I think about individuals, to look past some of Ezra's performances in the last sort of run of games. I mean, the West Ham 5-2 game, if you think about that, and the contribution he made to that. You touched on JP and his hat-trick, but also just the way in which his contribution, the balls up to him, have made a difference, and the fact that, you know, early in the season he wouldn't be winning those balls up to him.
His touch has got brilliant, hasn't it?
That's the thing, because beforehand he would have been like, it would have been a fluke. Was it the Wolves home game when it comes off his back and goes on to Eze for the that now would be deliberate, whereas back then it was a bit of a joke that, you know, it came off his arse, came off his bum, leg, whatever it was. Now it's coming to him, and I think so that's kind of one of the improvement points. And I think
the contributions he's made. But yeah, Man City away, me for the comeback.
Well, that bleeds into a little bit like player of the season, Brad, we talk about here. And oh, I appreciate JP won player of the season. And probably there's a little bit of recency bias in that as well. But we have to give credit to the turnaround in that player. And I said it before that I think that you started to see it sort of October, November time in terms of his hold-up play got a lot better. He managed to not get bullied off the ball. He managed to use his height and his physical attributes a lot more. But then, obviously, once Glazer's come in February, March time, he's taught him how to finish. Or it's coincided with him learning how to finish.
Yeah.
And he has become almost a complete striker. I think that I'm a little bit biased towards strikers who have that physical attributes, because obviously growing up watching football in the 90s, like Alan Shearer's, Les Ferdinand's, Teddy Sheringham's, big lads, bullied defenders, and I love that type of striker. And for me, that's why I won't argue too much with JP getting that sort of player of the season, because I've seen his progression, I've seen that uptake, I've seen that increase in output. Notable mentions for Jefferson Lerma, Jordan Ayew before he went to AFCON, and obviously Nathaniel Klein. And obviously, if we're doing half player of the season, Adam Wharton as well. But in terms of a whole player of the season, I think it's quite difficult to argue with JP. Kev?
Yeah, I agree, Luke. I mean, as you say, the transformation in the player has been significant. I mean, he'll always be a cult hero for me. When you can score a double back heel nuts at Brighton as he did Millwall the other year, and Millwall, the goal he's got in Millwall, you know, he's ended up with what, 19 goals this season? That's incredible.
16, I think it's, yes.
Yeah, but I think 19 in total.
Plus.
But 16 in the Premier League, which I think mostly matches Benteke in his first season.
He's one below Benteke, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's the most impressive.
But the reality of it, and like as you would expect now, he's playing football with a smile on his face. You know, who can't be excited when you're playing next to Elise and Eze? And they just look as though they're enjoying their football. So for me, it's mostly him. I think for a guy who's made impact, as you said, both the lads who came in January have been phenomenal, really. I thought the right back was outstanding, Munzel, and he has been. I love his mentality, the way he plays his football, and I think he's been the perfect fit for us. And I think he's made other defenders get better around him. I mean, the Nathaniel Klein, the Tyrick Mitchell, and I feel sorry for Mitchell that he hasn't got the call up to the England.
He might well do.
You know, if Luke Shaw doesn't recover and Trippier does, I can see him going, because actually, do you know what? You play players who are in form, right? So I agree with you. I think it's mostly JP.
But you mentioned JP getting that sort of service. I don't think we've seen that in a Palace striker since Glenn Murray, and he had Balassi and Wilfie beside of him. So he's certainly benefited from that. Matthew, play the season for you.
I think Tyrick Mitchell will be in there if he'd scored more goals. I think he's had quite a few chances this year. And I think you guys have touched on the second half of the season, these opportunities to get forward more. I think he's taken them really well. And what could have been quite a mediocre season for him could have been actually something special if he'd finished some more of his chances. So I think he's up there with a shout. Obviously, the goalkeepers have shared responsibilities this year, so you can't really say one or the other. But I think Lerma, for me, in terms of the consistency, and I also think that if he hadn't got injured towards the end of the season, I think he probably would have got it, just in terms of his contribution consistency throughout the year. I mean, obviously, everyone looks at Ezra and Elise from outside Palace, and you'd expect, as an outsider of the Palace fan, for them to be getting it. But yeah, I think you're right, JP for the transformation at the half year point and what he's delivered. And he showed splashes of it, like we said earlier, against Plymouth for the hat trick. But the fact that he's delivered in the last few games on a consistent basis, but his contribution more roundly and his development has been noticeable. So I think, yeah, him.
And if I may, which is not linked to this question, Matt, but I think the exciting thing, you've talked about Lerma there. We talked earlier about missing Decore this season and what a massive miss he's been. You know, when he comes back in pre-season, assuming he's well enough to come back in pre-season, that's going to feel like a new signing.
Yeah.
And that actually gives you that bolster in the midfield as well, which, because you want competition for places, right?
That's all about Morton and Zakori, aren't they, as well, in the middle there.
So I think that's big. A couple of questions I want to throw in, if I may, or one question. Do you think that the goalkeeper, Henderson, has now won the fans over? Because I think some people will always feel that, you know, there was a little bit of whether he was or not. You know, you're there all the time. I think you made a couple of great saves on Sunday, particularly one early on in the game, I think, when it was 1-0. What's your take on it? What's the vibe you're getting?
I think more people coming around to him. I think Sam Johnson is still the fan favourite, and that's probably mostly down to his song.
Okay.
But I think, yeah, I think that Dean Henderson, once he's got a decent run in the team, has shown his quality. And look, this hope he goes to the Euros, because I think he's been playing regular football, so he certainly deserves it more than Aaron Ramsdale, despite the fact that Andy Ramsdale is a fantastic goalkeeper. But for me, you've got to take keepers that have been playing. So James Trafford, I appreciate he hasn't played the last five games, so he's got to go as well as perhaps the third choice. And Dean Henderson should be going as second choice England goalkeeper. And had he had Sam Johnson not get injured, it would be Sam Johnson we're talking about in that position. So yeah, I think he's winning a lot of fans round. I still think there are people who have that sort of nervous moment when it's passed back to him. But that was partly down to also Tyrick Mitchell's terrible back pass to him in that game. What game was that? That was, wasn't Newcastle or...
It was 3-0 by that point, wasn't
it? I can't remember what game that was, isn't it? West Ham, yeah, that's West Ham, yeah. But I think I've got a lot of faith in Dean Henderson. I think he's a very good shot stopper. I think that people talk about his distribution, but that throw against
that throw against
Villa, he should have got an assist for that. It should have been a goalkeeper assist collection there, because that was fantastic. So for me, I think he's coming round and bringing the fans round, and deservedly so, because he's put in some excellent performances.
I have nothing to add. Everything he said, I think Johnson's been the popular choice, is probably say, but Henderson's proved his worth. So that's off to him. Well done. Well done. We talked about JP, but another most improved player, Kev, outside of JP?
Well, it sounds strange, bearing in mind he's a seasoned international and has been, played for England and Liverpool. But for me, I think Klein has come on significantly. I don't know what's happened, and he's always been a good player, but he seems to have found another level. And I don't know if that's through energy or what he's doing with Glasner, but I think Nathaniel Klein, I think, has been exceptional. And I do think Anderson has come back to the table this. Certainly towards the back end of the season. I mean, Luke talked about his brilliant goal he scored at Man United, which is that's a quality technique. And I want to come back to Manchester United a little while, if I may. But I think Anderson has been outstanding, and I think Nathaniel Klein has been different level.
Lucas?
Well, look. The answer is Jean-Philippe Mateta. We've already mentioned him. So Nathaniel Klein also, let's not forget the job that Joel Ward came in and did fantastically in that role as well. But for me, Will Hughes, he's been a revelation in that position under Glasner. I think a player that a lot of people have written off as being a squad player who wasn't good enough. And I think that there was a period of time where Will came on and we were losing every game when he came on during that sort of rough period under Roy and the start of Glasner's regime. But he became such a solid footing, I think he also allowed Wharton to flourish a lot more, because he did a lot more of that dirty work for Wharton. Not to say he can't do it, but he did it so that Wharton could do the sort of the range passing and pick those balls. So Will Hughes has been a revelation for me, and I think it's a shame he got injured against Wolves, and because he would have certainly got a big round of applause on that lap of honour against Villa.
Last one from me. Favourite game of the season, Kev?
I suppose for watching it, and obviously I wasn't at the stadium, but I watched it live on Sky. I've never felt so comfortable watching a game against Manchester United in all the years I've been a Palace fan. Now bearing in mind I've seen us lose twice to them at Wembley, you know, to be as comfortable as we were in the Man United game. I can remember ringing my mum at half time saying, she said, I've got no worries that we're going to be quite comfortable tonight. And we just looked in control. And I know they picked on the guy who fell over for the fourth goal, Casemiro, absolutely. And I felt they made him a bit of a scapegoat that night. I think you could have picked any one of a number. And you know, they picked on a high profile player, but we were unplayable that night. And so I think I mostly got most satisfaction. I was just praying for us to get the fifth goal, so it was like back in the day when Johnny Collison would have been growing up, you know, 1972, when I think we beat him 5-0, which was a, you know, with the day Don Rodgers, you know, Jules Best playing, and those wonderful players. So it would have been nice, but I thought we, you know, we absolutely bossed it that night. So that would mostly be it for me, I would say.
Well, it's hard, like I mentioned earlier, it's hard for me to look past Man United. Obviously, the Villa game, I think I turned you, brother, 2-0 down, and I said to you, this could be 5 or 6 here, because I felt that comfortable that Villa just hadn't turned up, and we were in that end of season Palace form, that, I don't know what you call it, that summer high, spring high, whatever you call it, that the Palace seemed to get at the end of the season, where we just let loose and tear teams a new one. We were outstanding. So yeah, Villa, Man United, obviously the resolute performance away at Liverpool, I think, was fantastic. Obviously we took the lead and then held on to that as well. I think, seeing as Kev's nicked Man United, I've got to go for Villa. You?
Well, I've got things that are different, haven't I? Because you guys have shouted some good ones.
Because I wanted to pick Villa. Oh, no, I picked Man United.
I would have said Man United, like Kev said. I enjoyed the West Ham one. Yeah. Not often you get 7 goals in a Palace game, and, you know, it was, Palace were absolutely dominant.
30 minutes,
yeah. 30 minutes. And Palace were so dominant. The West Ham, considering they were, you know, European champions and so on and so forth, Palace absolutely played the pitch, and the two goals kind of flattered West Ham actually as well. That was one of the errors, wasn't it, we talked about earlier with Henderson.
I think West Ham, am I right in thinking, they'd only played Leverkusen on the Thursday night and got a draw and nearly beat them, and bearing in mind Leverkusen went the whole season unbeaten
until last night.
Was it, they lost last night, didn't they? Oh, right, okay, I didn't know that. So okay,
and then apart from that, Liverpool away, to go there and nick it and spoil their day like we often do was good fun as well. And we watched that in Canary Wharf, didn't we, in that sports bar. And that was a good fun day out. So
a few Liverpool fans,
basically all Liverpool fans.
Well, yeah, but in double inverted commas, Liverpool fans.
Oh, sorry, yeah, of course, yeah. In Canary Wharf. That's where they all came.
Welcome, team.
Before we do finish this, and I know all good things come to an end, but as someone once said to me, don't be sorry it's over, be happy that it happened, right? So bear that in mind later when this does come to an end. But one of the things I wanted to say tonight, which I think is so important, right? 49% of Palace's points this season came against 4 sides. There will not be many seasons where you win home and away at 4 teams. Now, we won home and away at Wolves, Sheffield United, Burnley and Manchester United. Now, that will very rarely happen. So if you think 24 of our 49 points came against 4 sides, that's pretty massive. There you go, that's left you speechless, isn't it?
Well, speechless, how long have you been holding on to that stat, Kev? Because
it's all like that whilst chewing a bit of chicken biryani earlier. It was just
3
like, you
days
know what,
ago.
I'm going to bring that up later.
Yeah, I've
got that stat in my head. I've worked out the percentage. I've got my iPhone now. I've got the calculator out. I've worked out the percentage.
Actually, I might even be able to show you that.
I believe you.
No, Kev, I mean, what a stat. I mean, the thing that blows me away, and it's such a lovely memory, is the fact that Man United have got 6 points off them this year.
Yeah.
Which everyone would say, oh, they were rubbish this year, blah, 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 blah. But we still got 6.
48.97%
is our win ratio. Again, you know, that was the percentage of points secured against those 4 clubs.
We appreciate the amount of research you put to this podcast.
Can that be the pod picture, please?
I don't think so.
But look, because the Man United stat is fantastic. Don't forget also the Wolves had a really good season as well. And yeah, the Gary O'Neill effect. So yeah, you know, it's that's
Derry left us to go there, which is very sad, really.
Even though he's still better than Stevie G.
More faithful than John Terry.
John Derry. Yeah, so that's a really good stat, Kev. That's the best one you've ever pulled down the pod as well, I think.
Anything else?
I think we should end on that. You can't follow that, can you really? Can you top that, Kev?
I think we should just finish it off with by saying to our loyal people who've listened to this, thank you for being massive supporters of this. I cannot begin to tell you how much of a pleasure it is doing this with these two wonderful brothers who I've had the pleasure of doing this with for 4 or 5 years, and it's really nice to be here doing it, and we hope it's a good listen for you all and a fair reflection of our season.
Well, thank you for being on, Kev. The fans want you, the fans have called for you, and now the fans have you. So hopefully the fans now have their Kevin Smith fix for the summer, and be itching and come August again. But look, the summer's a long time. Let's see what happens. Might do something over the summer. Who knows?
We can always talk about me being a double national champion as a coach.
Go on, Kev, tell us about that.
No, not now.
You dropped it now, mate. I'm not editing this.
No,
I'm too drunk to edit this now, so you might as well say it.
Under-11s national champions. We beat Leeds only a few weeks ago. So my girls' team, West Kent. Big up the West Kent.
Congratulations to West Kent
national
girls.
Champions. Very proud of them. Which follows on from winning the under-13s last year against Liverpool. So thank you, boys, for letting us do that.
It's an endless
list
of accolades.
Not only a pod man, a coach as well, but there you go.
A real football man.
There you go.
Can't have any bleeds balls.
And Crystal Palace ladies got promoted. So
Super League. WSL.
Sorry, Super League.
Super League. Get it right. If you're coming up to play Chelsea, get it right, son.
Chelsea come to play Palace, mate.
Absolutely.
And obviously the trophy the other night for the development team.
Fantastic. European champions.
The future is very bright for Crystal Palace, right? And let's just hope, as you alluded to earlier on in the night, we can get through the summer relatively unscathed, and then we go from there. That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. At 6 Pointer Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you to everyone listening. Hello to Kev's mum again. Thank you for listening as well. And as always,
up the Palace!
The 6 Pointer Podcast.